doors of the podcast dungeon, you have come across another goddamn horror podcast with Graham Fay, Jonas Barnes, and Ryan Danley.
Welcome, everybody, to another goddamn horror podcast. I'm one of your hosts. I'm Ryan Danley, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. Graham?
Yes. I take care of children for a living. Today I was making a pizza with a kid. It wasn't a real pizza, and actually it was a pancake, but...
I already like where this is going.
Yeah, he came up with the ingredients, and this is what ended up on the beach. A shark tail, granola, a baby, glass maple syrup, broken jail, darkness, and coffee.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of all of those things. So yeah, you know what I mean? So,
of course you're taking care of that kid.
I call him CB because he's built like a cinder block.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I don't want to give out his real name.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, that's we don't fair. Need to give out children's names.
So, but CB yeah. and I have a lot of fun making pancakes.
That's
out of darkness.
Out of darkness.
Fucking dark, void, darkness. Void pizza.
I like that because it's like the antithesis of when a tea company is like, made with love, or you know, the final ingredient is love. This kid's like, nah, fuck that, man. We're putting darkness in these pancakes. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm gonna order that at IHOP the next time I go.
Can I get a darkness and glass maple syrup?
I'm just gonna bring you a coffee.
Yeah,
which is also on the pancake.
I'm just gonna pick you something to sober up with. Jonas, how you doing?
I'm good, man. It's just chilling out in Bushwick, hanging out with my cat. Worked all day today, and now I'm here with you boys. So it's a good day.
Yeah. I went and did CrossFit today, guys.
Really?
Yeah.
What? Get the fuck out of here!
I know. I'm like a whole new person now. You know what I mean?
I do CrossFit every time I get out of bed. That's what CrossFit
I know. I do CrossFit. I eat healthy.
Are you a douche now?
Well, yes. I guess I'm just taking the veil off. You know what I mean? Like, no, when they come and they're like, hey man, you got type 2 diabetes, you know, the one you earn, not the participation trophy diabetes that they just give to kids, type 1. You know, I mean, as much as I want to lose my leg, which is the quickest way to lose weight, let's be real.
Yeah, immediately.
I just was like, you know, I did it. But I did get blood work done yesterday, guys. And technically, I am not like actively diabetic anymore because I fucked it up. Give me some cheers. Give me some cheers.
Excellent. No, yeah, I'm impressed. Yeah,
absolutely.
And you look good, honestly.
Well, legitimately. Thank you. I've had to give up like 10% of my comedy act because I can't make fat jokes anymore. Like honestly, like talk, like I'm still fat, but like I'm not like Taco Bell joke fat. You know what I mean? Like I've lost.
You're not famous on Instagram fat,
right? I have to you know just be kind of like better at comedy. I can't just low hanging fruit. Should we keep talking about this utter uselessness, or should we should bring our amazing guest in? I have been listening to bands from his record label. One of his record label's records is one of my favorite records of all time. He has been a member of the Southern California or California punk and ska community since the inception, as far as I'm concerned, since when it started mattering. Really want to welcome today from Skank and Pickle, Asian Man Records, Mike Park. Welcome, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No,
Northern California, though.
Northern California.
Yeah. Definitely not Southern California.
Yeah. I still associate a lot of, I know you're in San Jose, but I still associate a lot of that music from that part of, from Southern California, just because so much of it came out of there. But like, but yeah, you're a San Jose guy, which isn't that, you know, which isn't that far from me, really. So, you know.
Northern California is the part of California that has my heart too, so I'm all about it.
Yeah, I do stand up comedy down there through that section, and in Sacramento and Oakland and San Francisco, and then, you know, up in Eureka and things like that. So I like cruising that part of the world, you know, the extended Bay Area.
I went to LA once and I was not impressed. That's
about it. That's why I went to New York.
Good food. They've got good food, man.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The food, actually, I did enjoy a lot of the food there, and I remember going to places to eat. I remember being miserable everywhere else. But you know, they got food in New York, I think.
Yeah, like the Mexican food in LA is just,
yeah.
New York, I know, just doesn't have it.
They don't, like, and it's true. It's like you go out there and you get like excited about like all the food, and then like I'll be there for like a week and I'll be like, oh man, I need some Mexican food. You know what I mean? Like, I just, like, it's hard. It's hard because it's such a basis. It's such like the food of, you know, of the West Coast.
It's so cheap too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So affordable.
Exactly.
Dude, last time I went to LA, I made my friend go to a birria restaurant that was in between a textile factory and a laundromat. And they were like, you are taking me to a place to get murdered. And I was like, no, I'm taking you to a place that's only open on Saturdays. And it's amazing.
I bet it was so good.
It's so good.
I could literally walk around with an IV drip bag of Beardia. You know what I mean? Like, I could just like straight in me the Beardia.
Yeah.
So like I had declared this the summer of ska. And we made
logos and everything.
He made logos and everything. We haven't had as many ska influenced guests as I would have liked. But I don't think
there's a better one to get, though.
No, there isn't a better one. Well, we do have Dick Lucas in the shoot, you know, who was in a great ska band. But Mike, how does all this come about? How does this, like, you know, how does one become like part of a seminal ska band and
king of ska, kind of
the godfather of ska.
You just get old, that's what happens. They start calling you these things. But yeah, I gravitated it towards that two-tone sound from England in the early 80s, and I didn't even know it was ska, but once I realize what it was musically, man, I was all in and just fell in love with the music. Like 1985 is when I really started just diving into it and just going record shopping, and even where I'd wear like vintage mod suits to school some days.
That's right.
That's how awesome. I was into it.
So are you into a lot of like first wave ska, like you know, like,
yeah, I do like the traditional ska, you know, Desmond Dekker, Scottalites, Toots,
yep.
Bob Marley, etc. Yeah, I love it. I love that one drop beat and freaking good stuff.
Early Wailers, when they were like dressed so well, like when him and Bunny and Peter Tosh were all dressed like, and they were all in suits and stuff like that before the hair and before the whole thing, man, they were sharp. They were sharp as could be. They really could, like, they really, like, I mean, I got a record sent to my work once because I was to my house, and I walked around and everybody, and I showed them that Bob Marley with my hands covering the rest of it, and I was like, do you guys know who this is? And people would be like, I don't even know who that is, and I'd be like, that's Bob Marley, and they were like, oh my god, I had, you know what I mean, because he just looks so so does early Bob Marley just looks so different. But that era of stuff is just like, I think, you know, I mean, like Jamaica, Manchester, like, I mean, there's just like these small pockets of the world that just create this, like, such like this beast of music. And it's like, it's really a, it's really an incredible thing. I think ska should be taught in schools. You know what I mean?
I think I know what photo you're talking about. And if it is the same photo, that trio with the Peter Tosh, that's what Jerry Dammers used as his image for Two Tone. So that Two Tone logo is a cartoon of Peter Tosh.
That is amazing.
Walt Jabsko is the name of that Two Tone character.
I did not know that. That's
super cool.
Walt Jabsko. So you start Skankin' Pickle in what year? Because that had to be pretty early, right?
89.
So, yeah.
Which, real quick, is one of the best names of all time. It absolutely is. of music.
it's true, and it's memorable. And you guys, you definitely cemented a specific thing. You know what I mean, I would say you and then later on a little bit Less Than Jake and a lot of people really cemented that we're ska, but we do have a little bit of for lack of a better term, California punk influence on it, you know?
Sure. Yeah, we definitely were melding a bunch of styles in there. My cat just almost knocked this over. Okay, sorry.
Three out of the four of us have a cat, so yeah. you're in good company. So.
I have two big, insane dogs. They're great. But they occasionally will need to kill an Amazon driver, and that's so occasionally in the background. You'll be like, oh, is there a murder going on? I don't know. You know what I mean? So when you decide to do that, how does that come about when you're we're gonna mix Two Tone and stuff like that, lack of a better term, California pop punk? How does that come about?
Well, we were just influenced by Fishbone. So this is 89 and just wanted to be Fishbone. I mean, that was pretty much it. Let's copy them. Straight up just rip them off. We wanted to be them. We wanted to have that high energy live show, and how Fishbone would mix so many styles. We thought, oh, let's do it too. Let's mix reggae, punk, funk, metal, whatever.
Right.
With ska as the main ingredient. But we tried to do things differently, and we did. I don't know if it was good. Some of that early stuff I listened to and cringe, but it was fun.
It's funny. I really love the early stuff, and we've had other artists on here. Justin Pearson comes to mind, because we were talking about his struggle records, and he was there's one song on there I like, and I'm like, oh my god, I still think that stuff's the best of its, so it is funny how as artists, as Jonas and I are both stand-up comedians, and I look at my early stuff and I'm like, oh my god, this is so terrible, but the people were liking it, so you know what I mean. So I guess
I watched my first open mic video, and I almost just left that as my suicide note. Just put that on play on repeat and just be like, listen, this is why I'm not here.
Now, I have a question real quick. It must have been the mid 90s or something. Were you playing in Skanking Pickle around the colleges around the Northeast? Yeah. Did you play Vermont Academy?
I'm not sure. That doesn't
I think
ring a bell.
Someone was trying to get you to play Vermont Academy at some point, and I heard rumor, and I had never heard of Skankin' Pickle. I was like, what is that? And that might have been one of my first introductions into actual American ska, like the punked up versions of it. So
yeah, it's been a long time. So a lot of the shows.
No, I figured you probably wouldn't.
That'd be wild if he was like, I remember that show exactly.
He's like, oh yeah, weren't you standing stage left? And,
there was so much blood at that show.
So what year did you start Asian Man Records?
96, May of 96.
Boy, have you had some some bangers come out of there.
Two of my favorite records. Yeah. Alkaline Trios.
Yeah, I would say Goddammit by the Alkaline Trio is like really one of the best.
Yeah.
Like I think one of the best records.
Yeah, that's my favorite release.
Yeah, it's still it's so unreal. Yeah, it's still it's so listenable. Good. And like with all the success that they've had and with everything, you could still listen to that first one. And I like Slapstick, and I had the Sundial 7-inch for a long time, but I saw this somebody who really wanted it. But that Goddammit record is just like it's just from top to bottom. It's like one of those no skips, like perfect records.
Yeah,
agreed.
Did you know that? Did you know them through Slapstick through being because yep. they were in a scope? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Because Dan's the member from Slapstick,
right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it. He just basically when Slapstick broke up, it was just like the gift that kept on giving. They just started when Slapstick broke up, they broke off into two bands, the Broadways and Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Broadways broke up and they branched out to the Lawrence Arms
and
the Honor System. Tuesday broke up, Dan went to Alkaline Trio, and then the drummer started a band called Colossal, which is a great band that's way underappreciated. And,
I know Colossal's fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic. But
that Broadway is full length too. Fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
So freaking good. And of course, Lawrence Arms.
Yeah.
So everything off of here, it's like
amazing.
It's like, it's really, there's just something about that era. And like that at that level, like occasionally like pop punk gets like it gets really silly and then it'll get kind of serious. And like that was kind of like that. It was like Dillinger Four and like all these bands came out at one point I really felt like Alkaline Trio was a great example of that. Yeah,
I love Dillinger Four too also.
Yeah,
for sure.
I wanted to mention this really quick because like this is like kind of a fourth wall break here for not for a lot of listeners, but I'm the one that's the least versed in all of this music. But now that we're talking about this, I just remembered something. One of the first concerts that I ever went to was actually an Alkaline Trio show, and I had no idea who the fuck they were. Had no idea. One of my friends is like, "You want to go to the show with me?" I was like, "Yeah, I'll go to that show with you." Like, you know, whatever. And it was a show that to this day made me fall in love with live music. It was such an amazing show. And I was just like, who are these people? Like, right. And it just set me on a full thing. I was like, oh my God. Like, yeah. So huge fan of them. So,
well, I just real quick, I want to, some of the bands that I absolutely love off of Asian Man, Alkaline, Grumpster. Fucking great. Kepi Ghouli, Laura Stevenson, Shinobu, and the Murder Burgers, and now Lectron.
Yeah, that's awesome.
This shit is all fucking fantastic. And like I grew up not that big into ska. Like actually the second show I ever saw a live show was Boston's. But for some reason I went more towards like the metal punk stuff and always kind of appreciated ska, but didn't listen to a lot.
But every band you just listed is not a ska band.
exactly. But that's true. But recently, Ryan has been telling me to listen to more and more and stuff. But I don't know where I was going with that. I realized that I do listen to a lot and so there were a very few people in the punk world like that were famous to me. That I respected, and it was like Ian MacKay, Fat Mike, and you, and like those were like the three people that were like coming up, putting out stuff when I was growing up that I like loved, and was like, oh, these three people have their ear, like perfectly set up. And I remember reading about you all the time and being like, this dude is incredible. But a lot of your music, I was like, it's all right. But now, like I've been listening to a lot more. I listen to the Wavebreaker number 2, and that shit is fucking great. Like, so, yeah. Oh, this awesome. Summer has actually recently gotten me to listen to a lot more ska and realize that I actually love RX Bandits a lot. So,
yeah, well, that's a crazy good band, but they... God, they are barely ska. They're like
now, yeah.
Insanely, just they're just good. It's like
Prague ska.
Yeah, it is like Prague. It's crazy. Musicianship is crazy.
Graham and I have a disagreement. I consider American Steel a ska band, and he does not.
Oh, no. Not even close.
I think that first record has tons of ska stuff in it. But anyways, that's.
Oh my God! Am I right?
Yeah, dude, right. You just got shut down on that one, Ryan.
Okay.
Sweet.
But American Steel, that first album was great.
I like all their stuff too. But that first album is a beast, and I think it has tons of ska breakdowns in it. They do a lot of anyways. But it's.
I have to admit, these two have bullied me into listening to more ska. And like at first, I was very resistant. I was very resistant of it, and I was like, "No, you motherfuckers!" But now, like, I'm actually getting a lot more into it. So they've done a good service for it.
Yeah. So you've done all these. You're part of it. Do you like where ska? We have Aaron Carnes coming on next, and his
yes,
or not next, but soon. He is. We have mutual friends. He's friends with a lot of Sacramento comedians that have been on the show that we're friends with. And Aaron has released a book called, "Ska Sucks."
In defense of ska.
Ska Sucks Crossed Out. And I think that there's like a really great kind of like ska like I don't call it a revival, but like I think there's like a different like appreciation for it now. You know what I mean? I think it's like I'm seeing it like come up in like the weirdest places. You know what I mean? Like, okay, so people are ska. Have you noticed that from your side of the the business?
I just know that there's a new crop of bands that are taking it in a new direction, and it's a lot more nuanced towards a seriousness versus I think a lot of that third wave 90s ska was kind of like more wacky based, which is off-putting to a lot of people because especially since ska was the roots are such working class musicians and then the British movement was very political with two-tone being the black and white uniting. So I think 90s ska turned off a lot of people, even though there were a lot of great bands. And this new generation, I feel like they're just taking it a lot more serious. And they are more political with their actions, not just through lyric and music, but through their social media posts and overall just ready to take a stance against any kind of bullshit, which I was like, yeah, hell yeah. This is what I've been wanting to do for the last 30 plus years. So it's cool to see this new crop of kids like really putting it down hard.
And, you know, and that's kind of like what I was saying earlier, like, you know, like things could get like really silly in like 90s pop punk. But then all of a sudden there was like a bounce back of like a little bit of seriousness. And you had bands like Alkaline Trio and Dillinger Four and even like the Get Up Kids and like, you know, like those. And then, you know, and then all of a sudden that, you know, there was like definitely like a like, you know, I mean, they can call it like emo influence or whatever, but like the crowds change, you know, all of a sudden kids who are listening to the Queers 3 years ago we're now listening to like Hot Water Music, and that cat is amazing. Oh my God, that cat is the raddest.
What's your cat's name? We have to know now.
Alfie.
Oh, Alfie. Love it.
Alfie's adorable.
Adorable. Hey, Alfie.
I would kill for Alfie.
I would die for that cat.
You know, so, and I agree. And, you know, I mean, times are more serious now. I mean, I think the 90s were just like a little loose anyways, you know what I mean? Because the economy was good and we didn't have we had a psychopath in the office, but like a nicer psychopath, you know what I mean? Like a more, like less like front, you know, like it was less obvious. And, but like, you know, but like, no, but like, I mean, if you follow like Ska 2 Network and they, you know, a pretty serious person about, you know, racism in the scene and this and that, sure. You know what I mean? So there's a different energy to it for sure. You know?
Yeah. 100%. And also just to clarify, I like fun, silly music too.
Sure.
That's
totally.
For sure.
Totally.
I'm down with the Aquabats and Gore. Oh, yeah. And
yes,
which, you know, the numerous bands who from the punk scene that sang about, you know, TV party and
right, totally.
Exactly. Wanting a, you know, Pepsi. It's
funny. Nobody would ever sing about television, yeah, and punk. That was what my entire band was based on. It's just me watching TV. I full disclosure, I did open up for a ska band in the, I don't know, late 90s, maybe early 2000s. And you don't have to say anything. I'll name drop them because I don't care. But it was, I voted for Kodos, and I don't remember their music, but they were dicks. They were just.
I don't know them at all. I've never met them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I remember them coming up with like Big Kids and the D, or Big D and the Kids Table and stuff like that.
So they're an East Coast band.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know them. Let's talk.
Okay.
About
good.
Them.
Well, no, I mean, I don't think there's.
Let's just turn this. We won't talk about horror movies at all. We'll just talk shit about these guys.
Other bands. Well, how do you feel about Propagandhi?
I love them.
All right.
Great band.
Do you get along with them? Do you know them or anything?
No, I've never met them. But I respect them. And you know, I like the Weaker Thans also.
Sure.
And
a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, definitely. I actually like them more than Propagandhi, but
me too. Yeah,
I just like this. Like, where are they from? Manitoba.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like, fuck, what the fuck is in Manitoba? And just to come out of that scene. And plus, I saw the singer Propagandhi wearing a Degrassi t-shirt with a picture of Spike from Degrassi Junior High, the Canadian. I don't know if you know that this.
Oh yeah.
Show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that made me like them even more. I was, yep, like, oh hell yeah.
It's like, how are you awesome singing about anything except caribou? That's the only thing in Manitoba. Like, yeah, what's going on?
Yeah,
well, they're one of the most political bands on earth.
Right. Exactly.
I think that they
over there, yeah, in Canada.
Yeah. No, Propagandhi's been pretty good. And I will even admit to liking the song Ska Sucks, just because it's...
It's a fun song.
it's totally a fun song. They're fun guys.
It's okay to have a fun song that shits on it. It's all right. I want to say this is probably what will be my last inclusion to the Ska conversation, because I'm so least versed in this. But when you were mentioning Fishbone earlier, the reason I'm bringing this up is because Fishbone was one of the bands that I listened to early on, and they were probably my first introduction to ska. And they did something a few years ago. I don't know if you remember this, but Alice in Chains actually got they got an induction into the Pop Culture Hall of Fame in Seattle, and Fishbone came back together as like a full band and did a cover of Them Bones. Did you actually see that performance?
I heard the song. I didn't
heard
know
their version of it.
Yeah, because I remember them posting about it. And they had posted a photo of them with the vocalist from their Lollapalooza tour, mm-hmm, and like, you know, writing something about doing this compilation. And so, yeah.
Yeah, cool. They did a live performance video of it. And it was like, it was something that I saw and I was just like, the reason I bring it up is because it was one of those things that kind of made me like think about ska in a different light again, because I looked at it and I was like, holy shit, like the translation of that song, of like that, the translation of that source material into ska, I was like, holy shit, there's a lot more layers to this than I ever thought, you know, because again, I was just not versed in it. And then these fucking guys got me back on a path of it. So now I'm listening to more of it. And I'm like, okay, there's a lot more to this than I thought.
Now he's skanking around Bushwick. Like, you know what I mean?
One more question real quick. Do you know the bands Gutless or Jer? Or Jer, is it?
I know Jer. Jer is ska to network.
Right, right.
Gutless, I'm not familiar with.
Check out Gutless. They're from Florida and Brooklyn.
Okay.
Super great. Super great.
Sounds good. I will check it out.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to cross over into some horror talk here. And there is some horror relations. And I actually haven't brought this up to you, but I was just remembering it. Someday we will have him on, because I've been in talks with him. But Matt I'm going to butcher his last name because
Skiba.
No, not Skiba. Bettinelli Open.
Yes, from the last two Scream movies and the original guitarist for Link 80.
Yep,
which was the fifth release on Asian Man Records.
Yep,
Link 80, 17 Reasons, and he also, man, he directed what, VHS.
Yep,
was one of his early success. Very well versed in the horror industry.
Yep. I love that a ska, like a player in a ska band, has made it to like making like these huge franchise movies that were like very successful and also very good.
And Ready or Not is one of the best horror movies to come out.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
In years.
Read the Ready or Not too. So, do you feel like his time, and particularly the Bay Area ska scene, gave him the motivation and the tools for that?
Absolutely not. But it was just an extension. It was an extension of him just being a creative person, and which is crazy about that band is so many members have just done incredible stuff in art. The trumpet player is just an amazing painter. The sax player is living in Denmark now, plays in so many different projects. The guitarist is in a ska band right now, and he's a great illustrator too. It's just cool that, you know, these people are just making art. Even if they're not playing music, they're doing something creative. And I think Matt Bettinelli Open just had it in his blood. He likes to create. And he did the first ever Alkaline Trio video too. Goodbye Forever.
Oh, did he?
That's cool.
That's really cool.
But that was with no notice. Like, we just did it that day. So we had no storyboard. The band just happened to be in Santa Cruz, and that's where Matt was going to school at the time, at UC Santa Cruz. And I just said, let's just make a video now. And so we did.
Wow,
that's awesome.
Not very good video, but
hey, you know, little did you know he would go on to become, like, you know, quite the, I mean, like,
yeah,
that little group of people that they work with are really incredible. And, you know, I really like that.
So Radio Silence, Radio Silence is his production company, and they fucking rule.
Yeah. And you know, I, so that was the first, I think, Asian Man record that I bought, was that Link 80 record. And that Kaiser Soze song that's on it is still freaking, like, one of my favorites. And it was, like, such a perfect like ska song for that era. And then, you know, and then unfortunately with the singer's passing and all that, was really, really too bad, you know. And I know that there was people in that scene that gave him a hard time and stuff like that, because sometimes punks aren't real good at things, you know, handling shit. So Link 80 is pretty rad, and it's really cool to see, like, people come out of that scene, because it's such a specific thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's like one thing. It's like, oh, you came out of like a Fat Records band from, like, Southern California. Like, okay, there was a lot of those, and nothing, no disrespect to any of that music or anything like that, but just like, but there was a lot of that, you know what I mean? And so, like, Epitaph, Fat Record, all those labels, and, like, you know, and, but to come out from, like, okay, I was like in a cool small band from a small genre of music on a, like, private label and things like that, to see them having the success, and particularly with horror, is, like, for me, like, okay, this is where it all comes together. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah. 100%. So, a quick question for y'all. Top five horror villains.
Okay, let's five horror villains.
Let's do it.
Yeah, we'll start with Ryan.
Okay. Real quick, I'm gonna go the aliens, or the bad guys in They Live. Just because it's such a political statement, and it's such a I'm gonna say in Spiral, the Book of Saw, the bad guy in it, because he's actually the good guy, because he was going after cops who killed his family. I'm gonna go Freddy Krueger at number three, because it was such a creative character. I mean, I don't like Freddy Krueger as, like, a person, but, like, as a, you know,
That's great.
Yeah, but like, but the actual creation of something that lives in your dreams is absolutely fantastic. Four, I'm going to go The Thing, because because The Thing is such a, like, you don't even know like am I the thing? We don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know if I am the thing. You know what I mean? Like, so I love The Thing, and I think the number one horror villain is season 7 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the first. Because it's the concept of the first is the concept of first evil, and like the evil that lives inside of all of us, and how that manifests and how it just exists, and how like they have to fight like this initial like ground level, I think is a really deep concept. And like one of the things that made that show so good was like some deep cuts like that. And so that's my top five villains.
All right. Well, Graham.
Oh, crap. this is gonna be really tough. I'm gonna go, I don't know if these are gonna be in order. I'll try to order them afterwards. Audrey 2 from the Little Shop of Horrors. Mm-hmm. The Xenomorph, the Queen from Alien, or Aliens, I guess. Is there queens in this? Yeah. So the Xenomorph in the first one. No, we'll go with the Queen. And it's not really the villain, but no, all right, I won't go with that.
It's a tough question.
It is.
Oddly, you can even say 10. Just like, who do you like? But,
well, there's Jason, Freddy, and all right, Leatherface. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Leatherface is up there from Texas Chainsaw. It's not horror, but fucking I'm going to stay horror. let me get one more good one. No one's ever seen that movie. Psycho Gorman from Psycho Gorman.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay.
But Jonas,
man, I'm definitely gonna say Freddy for sure. Freddy Krueger is probably, to me, probably the greatest horror villain of all time. That's that, like, just as a whole, that one is probably top of the pile for me.
And he's a comedian.
He's an asshole, and also terrifying you in your dreams and being able to kill you in your dreams is horrifying to me. The Event Horizon, the ship, is actually one of my favorite villains. Just the concept of the ship being that portal to evil is pretty amazing to me. Pazuzu, the demon from The Exorcist, for sure. The last two, as far as villains go.
Wait, what was your second one?
What's that? My second one was The Event Horizon, the ship.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Chucky. Chucky is one of my favorite villains as a whole, just because.
That's a great one. Shit, yeah, good one.
Like, Chucky, just in general, to me, no matter which version of Chucky shows up, I'm always like, fuck yeah, Chucky's here. Like, I'm always just like excited for a Chucky to show up.
Yeah.
and then the last one,
the leprechaun.
No, I do love the leprechaun, and the leprechaun will
get Jonas watch every St. Patrick's Day. Jonas watches the entire series.
I do. I run through them all. And they all age horribly, but it's also kind of fun.
Worse and worse every year.
The leprechaun gets an honorable mention, but honestly, the top of my pile, even though Freddy's my favorite villain, like my favorite true villain of all time in horror, my actual number one, 100%, no questions asked, I have a tattoo of it on my arm, is Beetlejuice.
Oh.
Because Beetlejuice is a villain. He's a fucking asshole, but also
he's like a Freddy.
He is. He's like a Freddy, but I could hang out with Beetlejuice. I would not want to hang out with Freddy. I could chill with Beetlejuice for a little bit until he tries to marry a teenager. Then I'm like, go back to wherever the fuck you came from. And we can't hang out anymore. You terrorize the rich people. We're cool. You want to marry a teenager? Get the fuck out of my house.
So the reason why I asked, I was curious if how many would say Jason. And the reason why I'm wondering about Jason is, The creator, who is the creator of Jason Voorhees?
Well,
do we know the writer who created Jason Voorhees?
Well, Sean Cunningham, it's what's his name? I want to call him Arthur Miller, but it's not it.
I know Miller's the last name.
Yeah, so Sean Cunningham like is credited with creating like Jason as we know him now, hockey mask, mechanic suit, Jason. Victor Miller. That's right. But Victor Miller is credited with creating the name and the kid Jason.
So who is Victor Miller's son? Ooh, you won't know this.
No.
Oh, I don't know.
Victor Miller's son is Ian Miller. And what band was Ian Miller in? Skank and Pickle.
No kidding.
Oh, wow. Get the fuck out of here. Wow.
When we were on tour, his parents live in Connecticut. So we stayed at the house and we saw the MTV Popcorn Award for the Jason. He won an award for like the Jason Voorhees character.
Wow.
That's awesome. That's a great connection.
That's really fantastic. And it's like, look at all this talent that's in ska. You know what I mean?
That's like, a scoop. I feel like it's decades after the fact.
Still, that's a hell of a little nugget of information.
I mean, but they just settled that lawsuit. You know what I mean? Like they last year settled that lawsuit. You know,
I didn't even know there was a lawsuit.
They were
fighting over the rights, over the Jason Voorhees rights between.
Yeah, just kept Friday the 13th in like limbo, sort of like nobody could do anything. They made a game that was amazing, but then like there was still more problems because the lawsuit. So
yeah.
The game died.
Yeah, so Victor Miller sued Sean Cunningham because basically, like, he came up with the idea, but Victor Miller won, and essentially that Jason Voorhees, like the idea of Jason Voorhees, was enough spawn from his that he's now owed the money from the franchise because he essentially wrote that first one, and then that was it. And then Sean Cunningham sort of took the thing from then and then moved on to there. So it didn't
give him the mask right away. Like no. The mask didn't come until the third movie.
But I, as a writer, think that like lots of writers famously get screwed on those sorts of things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They come out and they come up with this whole idea like, okay, well now we got this kid in the lake and, da, 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 da. And it's like, okay, well now you've taken the character and yes, you've altered the reality of the character, but like the truth is that it's still based on this, it's still the same character, so I totally support that. But and now that I know that he was in Skank and Pickle, I'm like so pro Victor Miller that it's like
his son.
Yeah
so he must be loaded now.
Oh,
Victor Miller.
I hope so,
because he had a Miller house back in the 90s, so
so I want to say this is a defense of why I didn't pick Jason. And I think depending on how many Friday the 13th movies you've seen, you would understand this. The reason that I didn't pick Jason in my top five is because each of the Jasons in each of the movies is almost a different Jason. Like they're so different of a character throughout the movies that like Freddy is pretty much Freddy throughout the whole series. There's occasionally he's a little bit more of a wise ass. Occasionally he's a little bit more demonic, but or whatever the case may be.
Same size, he's still Freddy.
Yeah. He's still Freddy. But then Jason, you've got like zombie Jason. You've got oops, we couldn't get Jason, so it's this asshole Jason. You've got Uber Jason from Jason X. You've got all these different ones. And like, if I'm picking a Jason, I'm picking Friday the 13th Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan Jason.
Every time.
He's
kills hanging cops out with punks and rapists, and he shows solidarity with the punks.
Yeah, dude, he showed up to the punks.
He doesn't spend much time in New York, which is fine. That's everybody's like complaint, like, oh, they take the boat half the movie, they only spend 20 minutes. It doesn't matter, that 20 fucking minutes, and it's more than that.
You know why?
How did he get revived? Was he like, did the anchor hit him? Like, he had like an electric line or something when he was underwater? Like,
yeah.
I don't even remember how he was revived in that one.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was an electricity thing the same way it was when they revived Zombie Jason.
How was he killed in 7? That was the...
So in 7, the mom, the dad who
they're
died sick, in the lake,
right?
It comes out and comes up and grabs him because, you know, he's fighting like basically the Carrie. Yeah. You know, he's fighting the 7 is the new hope with the you know what I mean? She has like the powers.
It was basically a callback from the first movie, grabbed him, pulled him into the water.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 8, somehow he gets on a boat in Crystal Lake and goes to New York
in New Jersey,
which is great. It's fine because it rules.
Also, where does final chapter rank with Corey Feldman just butchering Jason at the end?
It's actually my favorite of the entire.
4 is probably the best one.
4, yeah, 4 is, yeah, like, 4 is the slide.
Like, technically, it might be the best one.
Yeah, I mean, the 4 has got like all the good stuff because the 4 is with Crispin Glover, right? It's been in the.
I believe he's that one. Yeah,
or is that 5? Okay, but
that's 5.
That's 5. That is right? 5. Yeah, where he's calling for the
corkscrew. Right.
But when Corey Feldman comes in and hits him with the machete and he falls and his head slides down it, it's like one of my like top 5 favorite like death scenes in a movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. I love the Friday the 13th movies and I love Jason. I just think as growing up, I like Jason more than Freddy, but as like just like now, like understanding like the like maybe because I'm in like work and entertainment, right? Like the artistic endeavor that went into creating Freddy just seems so much more. I mean, I love something simple and beautiful and brutal, but like there's just something just more about like I mean, that's kind of a hard thing to write, you know what I mean? Like as a writer, you have to be like, how do I write a creature that lives in your dreams? That's like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, Nightmare, for the first Nightmare is very good.
Yeah. It's super good.
It is.
It's also one of those rare franchises that like there's a couple really shitty ones, but for the most part, all of them are good. Like there's a couple, like obviously like, Freddy's Dead is awful. And that was like kind of a cash in. Like they're just like, all right, we gotta fucking kill this guy. And that one wasn't good. And we don't consider the remake part of that movie doesn't exist. It was all of us, that was our nightmare. That was Freddy attacking us in our nightmares. So that one doesn't exist. But like all the sequels, like even Freddy's Revenge, which is one of the ones that got shit on a lot, part 2, that's actually a good movie.
So
and
good.
Freddy's straight up
and
nasty.
3 is amazing.
3 is incredible, you know? And then like, so, and then Wes Craven's New Nightmare takes the artistic aspect of it and turns it up to 1,000, you know? So he completely reinvented what Nightmare on Elm Street could have been by taking this movie and doing the meta treatment where it's like a movie within a movie thing. And Wes Craven's New Nightmare, for my money, is probably the second best Nightmare on Elm Street movie there is, which is a hot take, but it's, I absolutely love that movie. I think it's incredible.
I got to watch the Nightmare series again, but one final thought about final chapter, besides the machete killing by Corey Feldman, is Corey Feldman doing cosplay as Jason Voorhees?
No, yep. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. And his character is kind of based on Tom Savini, who does, he's a special effects legend. Because he's always working on the special effects stuff as a kid and stuff. That 4 is really, really good.
Yeah, 4 is great. 4 is great.
Really,
it's a lot of fun, and it's also kind of like as far as like movies, like it's actually like a pretty good movie.
It holds together. It holds up. It's not just a Friday the 13th slasher.
Yeah.
Now, were you a horror movie guy when you were a kid or anything? Did you go to I mean, like lots of punks and lots of people involved in punk and metal and stuff like that did enjoy going to the video store and renting some horror movies. Did you?
When I was a kid, I loved it. Mm-hmm. Up through like high school, like all the, I just remember like seeing Friday the 13th, even part 3 in 3D in the theater and just being I think we snuck in. I think I was in eighth grade, and you just buy a ticket to whatever Bambi, and then you sneak into the yeah. you want. And just being so scared, just like holding on to our, each other, just like freaking out on everything. But it's weird. As I became a young adult, I just didn't like getting scared. Because even like watching something like Leprechaun, I'm still like getting scared. I'm like, man, I'm scared. What's going to happen next? So I just realized, like, I don't like getting scared. I'm going to stop watching horror movies. And the first really horror movie that affected me negatively, where like I've like shitting my pants, was I saw The Exorcist when I was 9, and it fucked me up.
Yeah.
It just straight up fucked me up. There was an attic right by my bedroom, and it was just like, what? I can't. It's still like, if I see images of Linda Blair Exorcist, I have to turn the channel, or if it's on like social media, I need to swipe right or left. I can't see it because it just gives me nightmares. The Alkaline Trio vocalist, just a horror buff. He loves this shit, and he just he's like, you gotta watch it. That's like this extended feature. Like, she's doing this crab walk backwards. I'm like, hell no, I don't want to see this shit. It's like, I can't. But to answer your question, I loved it as a teenager because I think teenagers just like to have fun. But as an adult, I can't do it. I'm scared.
I actually, there's enough
terrifying shit going on already.
It's fair, yeah.
I'm actually kind of like jealous of that. You know what I mean? Because it's like,
you still have a soul,
right? Like, you still like are like a, like sometimes, like, this is the only stuff that can calm me down, is to watch like these brutal murders, and like I'm like what the hell is the matter with me? Like, this stuff's like, and I still get scared, you know what I mean? I still do. I think there's some macho-ness out there. So I love when people say that they're scared, because it makes me like appreciate them, because there's a lot of macho like, none of this scares me. So it's like, no, I think things can be scary, and there's scariness in movies. I mean, I just saw, it's going to be one of my suggestions today, but I just saw Talk to Me, and one of my recommendations for later. But it's, I mean, like, I was like literally like scared. And so, I mean, it's a scary movie, you know, but like, now I like, you know, like I chase that dragon, kind of, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, like I need the scariness to calm me down. And it's like Adderall. Like, you know, you're a hyper person, so you take something that makes you more hyper, and it like, and then it like, you know, like it focuses you. That's how it is with horror movies. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a like a nervous person, so I watch horror movies, and oddly, like, the double downing on it like calms me down. You know what I mean? So it's
I just feel like the horror is contained in that movie, so I'm good watching it. You know, that's why it calms me down. I'm like, I this can't get me. And then when I think about it later, then I get scared.
Mike, I like that you have some innocence left in you, because like, I'm my brain is a sewer. Like, I will bring people into a room and be like, no, you got to watch this skull fucking scene. It's great. Like, they'll just be like looking at it like, why do you watch this? I'm like, because it's great. And they're like, there's nothing great about this. I'm like, look at the visual effects. They're like, yeah, it looks real. And now I'm going to throw up. Like, I don't know what to tell you. But there are movies that scare me, though. There are movies that scare me, and almost all of them are based in very realistic stuff. So I do feel you on that. Like, there are some things that if I watch them, I'll be like, all right, cool, I'm not going to sleep tonight. That's great. Shouldn't watch that.
Yeah, like, I didn't like the remake of It. I was just too scared. Like, I can't watch it. I'm just too scared to even like try. It's
pretty
watch
scary, actually.
I don't like. Yeah, I don't want to see this clown. Like, I don't want to deal with it.
There's a cute movie called Terrifier. You should see. It has the cutest clown in it. Just the cutest clown.
He doesn't talk, so he's not scary.
He doesn't talk at all. And I promise, he doesn't do anything like cut people in half. But anyways,
don't listen to Ryan.
No. It's you'll get one scene in, you'll be like, I'll never talk to that guy again.
Right. Exactly. So what else is going on with you? You said, Mike, you got a bunch of bands out on your thing. You got a bunch of things being released. You got a lot going on. So anything you want to give a shout out to real quick before we move on to our question round?
Not really.
Okay, go on.
Dude, that's fair. Fair. Real quick, Mike, before we get into questions, I have a question for you. Given that you are in the industry that you're in and everything, have you ever heard of a movie called Green Room?
Of course, with Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. You seen that one?
Yeah, I saw that
okay,
movie.
All right. Yeah. That was the only one that I would actually, like, literally tell you, like, no, you should watch that one. That one's kind of – that one feels like it's in the wheelhouse.
I mean, shit, I was scared by, like, professional wrestling, the Wild Samoans. They scared the shit out of me.
Oh, they're still terrifying.
And there was a Disney movie called The Shaggy D.A. in the 70s. It's just this talking dog. And
I used to that dog was weird looking, though. That dog was fucked up looking. I agree with you there.
Did you ever see the sequel to The Wizard of Oz? That's a straight up horror movie called Return to Oz. And it's an actual Disney movie, and it is horrifying.
What year did that come out?
It came out in, it was Fairuza Balk's first movie. So Fairuza Balk was like a child in it. She was like, I want to say 9 or something like that.
89 or 90?
Yeah, it came out in the mid to early 80s. And it is, like I said, it is a straight up terrifying movie. And it's called Return to Oz. They give her electroshock therapy in the first 10 minutes because they think that she's insane because she's talking about this land of Oz. They're like, cool, we're just going to shock those nightmares out of you. They showed that to kids and they were just like, here you go. Here's a sequel to
Disney. This is a Disney.
Straight up Disney movie. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I won't be watching it again.
All right. Here's the Sinister Six. Six opinion questions. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think this first one should be easy.
Okay.
Freddy or Jason?
God, that's I mean, I'd have to go Freddy because I love Jason, but Freddy's just, he's so good.
Yeah.
Jason doesn't talk. Jason just walks really fast.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between thriller and horror? And aside, are you scared of both?
Scared of both. So we would say thriller. Would a thriller be like Sixth Sense? Is that more of a thriller?
Sure.
Okay.
I would call that a thriller.
I think horror just a little more gore and maybe a main villain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yep.
What horror movie influenced your taste the most? That might be tough.
Yeah, that's tough.
How about what movie? That influenced your taste.
We'll go back to Final Chapter, Friday 13th Final Chapter, just because of that. Yeah, when he splits Jason.
So good.
Yeah. Awesome. If you could erase one movie from existence, what would it be? Could be movie.
Yeah, Exorcist, because it destroyed me for so many years. I could still, at age 53, I can't see it. If I see Linda,
I like The Grudge.
Yeah, I can't even, like, the thought of pea soup. Hell no. I'm not eating that.
Everybody should be afraid of pea soup. It's terrible.
It's gross.
Fuck a split pea soup.
I love split pea soup, but I'll eat split pea soup while I'm watching the scene. It's good. Like, it's all good. It's
You know what was one of the scariest parts of The Exorcist? When she walks down the stairs, not like a crab, and looks at everybody in the room and just pisses on the floor and then just walks away. She just stares at him, pisses, and then, like, I'm going back to my room. I just wanted to let you guys know that I had to pee.
She tells that one dude's gonna die.
She tells the astronaut that you're gonna die up there. You know what I mean? Which is just a dope move. That is a power move. There's a mic drop, and then there's like, yo, you're gonna die, and then piss on the floor, and then bounce. Right.
She pisses the most dehydrated piss I've ever seen in my life, too. It's just like, girl, you need some water. Like, just hydrate. That's why you're delusional. Come on.
Are ghosts real?
I think so. I do think so. I haven't personally experienced it, but a lot of friends have, and I just believe it. And I do watch a lot of YouTube about ghost stuff. It's, I like it. I like that. It scares me too, but I don't know. For some reason, I do watch that on YouTube.
That's right. That's great.
That's cool.
That's cool.
All right, last one, and you can pass on it. Midsommar or Hereditary? Have you seen both?
I haven't or seen either.
Yeah,
that's fine. Totally fine.
Yeah,
it's a little bit of a deep cut, that one, or deeper cut for a lot of. But I would suggest I would definitely suggest seeing Midsommar because it's not
gorgeous.
It's gorgeous and it's scary in like a different way. It's like it's more and Hereditary is straight up like a horror movie with
tension and spooky shit.
Yeah, and
if we made you watch Hereditary, you would put a hit out on our lives. Like it's right. Not it's pretty scary. Midsommar, not as scary.
You would be like, that's it. No more ska for you. Like, yeah, like you have now been removed from any ska situation.
Yeah, you're kicked out of every ska show for the rest of existence.
Like, listening to him.
No, Midsommar's dope though. Midsommar is awesome.
Well, that was a excellent round. You killed it. We're going to do some recommendations now. I'm going to, Graham, we'll land on you at the end. Graham, you want to go?
Yeah, I'm all set. First one is Paris, Texas. They're a Compton based hip hop duo. They're rapper producers, Louis Pastel and Felix. It's all self-release shit, and it's for fans of like Death Grips and JPEG Mafia, Danny Brown, Flatbush Zombies, and even Nirvana in there. They're all over the place. They're fucking rad. I can't get enough of that album. There's a new witch band. Witch bands are always good. This one's called Witch Weather, and they have a great EP from a couple years ago, and a new one called New Moon. The old one's called New Moon and the new one's called Don't Need. And they describe themselves as sad queer punk for your sad queer enjoyment. And they're from York, Pennsylvania. I really like that. I watched Bug by William Friedkin.
Ooh.
R.I.P. And Bug is one of my favorite. I love The Exorcist. I think it's incredible, but Bug, holy shit, there's something about Bug. I fucking love Ashley Judd, and if there isn't anybody scarier than fucking Michael Shannon, holy shit.
Especially Michael Shannon going into a PTSD episode thinking he has like bugs under his skin.
Absolute psycho. It's so insane. I loved it. And so I rewatched that recently. And please go watch that if you can. My last thing is... It's really hard to find right now, but if you can find the 1987 Street Trash, watch that. And then watch Fried Berry by Ryan Kruger. And then get really excited for the director of Fried Berry to remake Street Trash. Yeah. And it's not even a remake. I guess it's actually like someone asked him if it was a sequel or a prequel or a remake. And he was like, it's a continuation. Which sounds like a sequel to me, but whatever. It sounds awesome. He's making it in Cape Town. He's making it more about the discrepancies between the rich and the poor. And I'm so fucking excited. And he's so fucking excited about it, which makes me even more excited. We had Ryan on the show for Fried Berry. He's great. Super excited for that. So go watch Fried Berry and Street Trash.
He's also filming it in 35 millimeter.
Yeah, so everything I've heard about it is incredible. So,
yeah.
All right, Jonas.
Yeah. So,
oh, wait, I have one more thing.
Oh,
I got the Vault of Horror.
Oh shit!
Volume one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited.
That's very cool.
Yeah, all those EC, EC comics are just like forever amazing. Yeah. Like
I'm so
so much of my horror world, like so much of the things that. Have that EC Comics vibe. I mean, Skinner, a friend of the show. He's really heavily influenced by EC. Just that look and that horror comic vibe. That whole thing. That William Gaines from Mad Magazine and all those people. Like they really, really had their finger on something so fun and so cool. Like it was so like campy, but it wasn't even camp at that point. It was just what they were doing, and it was like. They just had like those monster movie, like it was like classic monster movies with just like that ultra horror blood and stuff. So it's so cool. Anyways,
thank you for selling my recommendation so well, Ryan.
Physical media in celebration of The Wrath of Becky coming out on Blu-ray and DVD, which I don't have it yet, but in celebration of that, this is the special edition of Becky, the first one, which if you have not checked it out, please do that, and then also see The Wrath of Becky because they both fucking rule. Mike, I have a feeling you'd probably actually like Becky. Becky's a cool movie, and The Wrath of Becky's even better. She's a little girl that kills neo-Nazis because they fucked with her family, and you can't do that, so... Like she's
hell yeah, vigilante justice. I'm down with
1,000%.
Becky might be a good series for
you. It's like imagine like Home Alone if the Wet Bandits were Kevin James as a neo-Nazi, and then she decides to like just brutalize the family. Brutalize the Nazis, and then the second one has Stifler as like a proud boy. And
Where can I watch it?
You can go
that
to
one.
Prime.
Yeah, Prime, I think. Yeah, I think it's on Prime. Like there's a line in the first Becky where Kevin James looks at her and goes, just come over to me, Becky. I don't want to hurt you. And she goes, oh, that's fucking sucks because I want to hurt you really bad. it's great. Wrath of Becky just came out on Blu-ray and DVD, so check that out. Becky's special edition is like pretty inexpensive right now. It's like $15 or something like that. It's got a bunch of cool special features. Musically,
Becky's on Paramount Plus and Showtime.
Okay,
sweet. Paramount Plus, but also I'm pretty sure it's on Prime as well, actually. It was at least last week. I know that for sure.
Yeah, for 99 cents.
Oh yeah, fuck 99 cents. That's not bad. But musically, Orbit Culture is coming out with a new album soon I think it's next week. But they dropped a single called From the Inside, which is a fantastic song. And it's even more of a recommendation because one of my friends that listened to it said, this is how good Metallica could be if Lars didn't fucking suck. And that made me so happy because I unapologetically love Metallica, no matter how many bad albums they put out. And I've always not liked Lars. So it's just like, that was a good shout out to that. Sympathy for the Devil is a movie that's also out that you can get on streaming and stuff. It's the newest Nicolas Cage movie. And I have a feeling it was kind of one of those movies that Nicolas Cage took because he needed the money before Renfield and stuff came out. But it's Nicolas Cage going absolutely fucking batshit Nicolas Cage. And it's super fun. It's got a little bit of The Hitcher. It's got a little, like, it's really, actually really fun. And it is Nicolas Cage at his craziest. So
he probably did it after Renfield too. I don't think he's going to change up his style.
No,
because of Renfield.
I don't think that. I think this movie though, because of the type of movie that it is, it feels like it's a movie that was made on a super low budget because a lot of it's like in the car. And then, like, when he gets out of the car, there's, like, one big finale that has, like, some cool special effects type of shit. But the rest of it's just in a fucking car. So it's, like, and also it's literally just Nicolas Cage going, like, bad lieutenant crazy. But, like...
But just, sitting in a car?
Yeah, it's great. Like, he gets into the car, and the very first thing he says to the guy when he gets into the car, he goes, get out of my car, man. I have a family emergency right now. He goes, yeah, guess what? I'm your fucking family emergency now. Drive. And he's just like, okay. And he just has to drive with Nicolas Cage being psychotic. super fun. And I think that... Cobweb. If it's still in theaters where you're at, because it's still in theaters around New York, if it's still in theaters where you're at, go see it while you still can. It fucking rules. So that's my last one.
All right, I'll make this quick. Music, I've somehow started geeking out on La Tigra. Like, I had, like...
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I had always, like, liked them and, like, heard them, but, like, I kind of, like, you know, like I always just kind of equated them to like just like Bikini Kill, which I also like, and you know, and the other Catherine Hanna projects, and like I want to be friends with Kathleen Hanna, and you know, Ad Rock, and like go to their house and like hang out and have dinner and chat about shit, you know, friend stuff. But it's but like I was listening to La Tigra this morning, like a song popped up, and I was like, oh my god, I forgot that they're like the punk rock Go Go's, and like this is how fucking great this is, and it's still just like still just such banging music. It's so perfect, and her vocals are just fucking spot on. So I'm gonna suggest listening to La Tigra again and Bikini Kill. That's good movies. I'm gonna go, there's a movie called Vampire that's on, and that's a very good kind of a low budget, simple kind of stuck in a town movie, and it's really dark, it's very dark, and it's very like thin and hollow, and Mike, I don't think you'd like it, but it's a guy comes from London to an Eastern European small town that's barely on any map, and you know, and the town is filled with weird people, which is terrifying to me. Like, it's just weird. Like, you know what I mean? I went into the movie theaters, which is I don't do a ton of, as everybody knows, but I'm doing it more and more. I went out with my friend Kyle Adams, who's a comedian, and we saw Talk to Me. And Talk to Me is one of the best movies I've seen in years. I don't understand any complaints about it at all. Like, it's just like a perfect, like, it's an A24 movie, but it's not like there's no like 20 minutes of pie eating or any crap like that. It's a pretty, it is a pedestrian, like, not, I don't want to say pedestrian, like it's boring, but it's like just like a horror movie. It's very good, the characterization is very good, and the concept of it's awesome, and the ending is one of my favorite endings in horror. It's very good, and like I just
Ryan, somebody told me it was too Australian, and they're not my friend anymore.
too Australian,
that's what they told me. They said it was too Australian because of the accents. They said it was too Australian, and I was like,
"I'm a make him watch Beaten to Death."
Dude, you're right. Yeah, like, yeah. I was like, "We're not talking anymore."
I don't think that person should be allowed to vote. But it's that's it. And then finally, a big shout out to Paul Rubens. You know, we lost him this week to a quiet battle he had with cancer, and. Paul Rubens was an amazing comedian and you know, Pee Wee Herman to me is an amazing character, like as a comic. Like the thing that made Pee Wee Herman successful is he wasn't just a moron, or he wasn't just like an absurd character. He actually was like a layered character. Like Pee Wee's kind of a dick. You know what I mean? And like, you know, kind of arrogant, and like, you know, there's just like so much like little nuance to that character. And that is like fully like an impossible thing to pull off. And like, and
so fully realized
and so through help written by Phil Hartman, actually. And, yeah. And you know, and, you know, started Tim Burton's career, even though, you know, I have opinions on that now, but like, you know, but like Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and also Pee-wee's Big Adventure, giving us Large Marge, truly horror moment in the middle of that, And, you know, and Pee-wee, you know, Paul Rubens, and he also suffered from, you know, he also, the embarrassing moments of his life, where a lot of it was rooted in homophobia, and you know,
he big
was
time,
a big, yeah. You know, and attacked for things that you know what I mean, like stuff that you know, that personal stuff about him that was clearly singled out for because of who he was. He was weird, and they made kind of a sport of him, and fuck all that. Long live Paul Rubens and the amazing creative art that he actually gave us, because Pee-wee's Playhouse was like some legit like synapsis relay creating shit in our brains, you know what I mean? And
I grew up, they used to play the stage show on HBO all the time, like on
Loop. Yeah,
and yeah. I watched that constantly. It was one of my favorite things.
Also, Paul Rubens had the best vampire death probably in all of movie history in fucking Buffy. That was one of the most hilarious and best, most tone perfect vampire deaths in any movie. It was fucking fantastic.
So good. So good. Mike, you a Pee Wee Herman fan?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Best answer.
All right. What recommendations you got for us today?
You know, if you want to check out the Asian Man stuff, just go to AsianManRecords.com. I don't want to single out any record because it's like picking your favorite child, but
sure.
Yeah, just check out. I think we put out a lot of good music over the last 27 years, and I want to make a change in my movie choice from a different Corey Feldman movie. And make the guess. What do you think I'm going to say?
License to Drive.
No, horror. It's going to be still horror.
Okay.
Lost Boys.
Lost Boys.
All right.
Lost Boys, yeah.
All right, perfect. Yeah,
that's because especially because the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk where they filmed a lot of it is right around the corner. So just like you could still see a lot of those artifacts in the amusement park.
That's awesome.
That's a great movie. I love that freaking movie.
Yeah, movie's still good. You know, and
holds up.
The acting in it is just like not enough is talked about that like the acting and the like, you know, Kiefer Sutherland at like really his prime, and like, you know what I mean, and although Kiefer's always been good, but like that was like really like when I mean he brought 100% to that, you know what I mean, and so it's
plus they got that shirtless saxophone player on the beach.
Hell yeah,
goddamn. Tim Capello.
he's still playing and he still looks pretty good, you know what I mean? And like he played in town here, you know, and he sold out, you know what I mean? So like
yes, and of course he did.
I mean, I would go. Like, I, you know, I didn't
sold out.
But it was sold out. I mean, I wasn't going to go to like StubHub or nothing for it. But like, you know what I mean? But like, it was, So, no, totally. Lost Boys is a fantastic choice. Always big fans. Big fan of that. Well, Mike, you are a legend. And
well, I'm gonna point out a band. I'm going to push a band. Electron. It's Matt Skiba from Alkaline Trio. And I think you put out like a single. Or two singles?
Two songs, 7-inch. I mean, two songs, 12-inch, actually.
Oh, cool.
Awesome. We did put it on 12-inch. Does he really need a push, though?
No, you're right. But I didn't even know that it was out until recently, but whatever.
Let me ask you this, Mike. Yeah. Let me ask you this. We're not going to make you pick a child. Not like that. Okay. But what I will ask you is, let's say somebody is getting their first introduction to Asian Man Records. Yeah. What do you think would be the quintessential album to be like, you know what, to start your journey, start here?
You guys already said it. Alkaline Trio, goddamn it.
Yeah,
all right. Yes. That's it. Good. There you go. That's all we need.
$980 I paid for the recording. That's it.
Wow. Wow.
Talk about a return on investment. Oh, shit.
I love that you still do it because like, I mean, like, you know, like Larry Livermore, like with Green Day and like a bunch of people, like they get like the big band and it's got to be hard to do it. So like you're still doing it and you're still out there pressing records and you're still doing the whole thing. And so big hats off.
So rad.
It's so great. You know, it's so important. You know what I mean? To keep that alive. So everybody around the world who's listening to this, please go support Asian Man Records. Mike is he's on all the social medias. He is we really do appreciate you, man, for coming on.
Do you have any record stores you would shout out in Santa Cruz? Because I feel like honestly, just feel like record stores. Yeah, San Jose.
Streetlight Records. Out there? That's Streetlight Records is the store I've been going to since the early '80s. Still here. Somehow they're still in business.
That's awesome.
Because of people like you that keep on going and checking them out. That's, you know, record stores die off very easily. And I feel like New York, we get lucky because we have a lot of them. But like, you know, I always like, if we can, to shout those out, especially when we have people like you on the show, you know.
They deserve all the support. You know, I talked to the owner of Second Avenue Records a few years ago about the changes in the business. She's like, you know, none of it ever really affected us. It's kind of like... it's kind of like ordering books online didn't affect small bookshops, you know, as much as it affected like big box books, you know what I mean? Like they, you know, like because I think there's a type of person who's like, I can listen to it on the thing, you know. And I mean, I'm a Spotify person too, but like, you know, clearly because it's just the way it is, but it's still like having it in hand. There's still going to always be that moment. Like I can walk into a record store and I can walk into a comic book shop and they both like, I feel like the exact same. I felt like my entire life, and you're never going to replace that with anything. You know what I mean? So I think it's, you know,
yes.
Yeah. So go buy physical media, listen to his bands on that, listen to Ska, listen to Skank and Pickle, and big shout out to Australia, back up over Germany. We love you, but we did have Australia, you know, because we got a big bump from Australia. We are the 54th film interview podcast in Australia this week, so I'm excited about that because we bounced back with interviewing Sam Curtin last week from your beautiful Tasmania. But UK still in second place. Love you, UK. Wales, I want to see a little bit more from you. I do want to see, because I'm part Welsh, so I'm repping Wales. Canada, you're in third place. New Zealand, Australia, Germany, Sweden, Turks and Caicos still moving up the charts.
Amazing.
I think just mentioning Turks and Caicos, everybody's like, yo, he's mentioning Turks and Caicos. India, India, we're doing so great over there. Mexico, Poland, Netherlands, France, Puerto Rico, Czech Republic, Switzerland, Thailand, and Brazil coming in, and then Ireland. Oh, that's it just makes me so happy. We're cranking in all those countries, and we appreciate you all so much for everything you do. And we do have a Patreon from $1 to $20. What are the Patreon members' names, real quick, Graham?
Oh, I have the list here. Sorry. I should have been on top of that, and I should probably know them by heart.
You have one job. No, just kidding.
I know, I did. I used all my power on my recommendations. The army of the fucking goddamned are Drew Muldowney, Stephanie Gurley, Katie Wyken, Chris Fortune, Alan Graham, Bacon Bits the Cat, Angela, Jasmine Pettit, Jason Daniels, Jake Jolly, Ron Canaba, Kristen Pearl, Manny Velasquez, and Coleman Rosenberg. And I want to... let everyone know that Bacon Bits the Cat has moved up a rank they're like a sergeant now.
Wow. That's fantastic.
I don't know how it works in that army, but
I appreciate you all so much for tuning in, and remember, if you're struggling at all in this world, please reach out to us. We all need to do this together. Stick around. There's plenty of horror to talk about, plenty of music to talk about, plenty of ridiculous Graham talking about Marvel racing or some shit to listen to. Like, we got plenty to do. So thank you all so much for tuning in. Until we see you next time, please go start some fires and break some glass. Thank you.